Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our favorite. I mean, our very favorite. Columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken, to the Ken Lovett Show. Good having you here.
It's good to be back.
You know more about state politics than anyone I know. It's so good to see you. Okay, let's start. I have a question for you, a very simple question. How did Andrew Cuomo make $783,000 on a memoir, All Things Possible? I think he stole that from All Things Considered, that sold 3,200 copies in publishing. That you could put those in a thimble. That works out to royalty payments, HarperCollins, to Cuomo of $245 per book.
Pretty good deal, huh?
Yeah.
Considering the book right now is on Amazon for $13 a pop.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. It was 29, I think.
I think my book on Mario Cuomo was probably a dollar.
Yeah, it didn't sell too well. It did not sell too well. But he's still making royalties. He unlike the president, the governor made his tax forms available this week.
And had to.
And the real notable, although there's no law requiring him to, but he did.
No.
And probably the only notable thing is that he's still getting royalties off this book. And he basically doubled his salary off the royalties on this book, even though the book sold really poorly.
Well, it wasn't a good book. That's part of what it was about. There was a very good book called The Contender, I guess.
Which also didn't sell very well.
No, it didn't.
You know, look, a lot of this was written with the idea that, you know, he was going to run for president at the time, and he didn't, and there wasn't a lot of national interest in Andrew Cuomo. Go figure.
Well, is there going to be a lot of interest in Andrew Cuomo in this coming election?
Who knows? Maybe we'll see a revival of the book. You know, he's certainly looking for it. Everything he's done so far gives you the indication, if at the very least, he's giving strong consideration for 2020. Look, I've been saying since 2011, when he became governor, that this governor has always acted on two tracks. Does it work for New York State? Does it work for federal, national purposes? And he continues to do that. And we saw it this year. He's tacked to the left. And he's certainly trying to make that, if there is going to be a Democratic primary in 2020 and he wants to be a part of it, he's trying to make the proper moves that would help him.
So, Ken Lovett, does he have the decency to be somewhat embarrassed by all of his money? Do we know?
No. Do you know anyone who's embarrassed by getting money? This is the deal he cut for the book, and we don't know why he cut the deal. It's with HarperCollins, which, by the way, is owned by News Corp.
By Rupert Murdoch. So could it be that all of this money was some kind of getting to know you? I mean, is that possible?
I have no knowledge of any kind of deal, other than they've gone hard on him of late, but Murdoch, early on, certainly, you know, had a decent relationship with Andrew Cuomo.
When he was a conservative. Remember, he started as a conservative. Then all of a sudden, he looked down, he was on the high wire, and he looked down below and he said, oh my goodness, I'm on the high wire, I may fall. So he went, as you said, I love the sailing term, he tacked left.
He tacked left and continues to do so. This year it was college affordability, which was, of course, a big issue during the Democratic primary last year for president. And, you know, we've never heard Andrew Cuomo talk about it. What was interesting listening to how he spoke, it was almost like he woke up one day and realized, you know, he's going around saying that, oh, I go to these factories in Tonawanda, a car factory, and the one thing you don't see is a wrench because everything's automated. Like, that's a new fact. Or the fact that now you need a college education. It's like high school education used to be. But this isn't exactly new. But the governor's interest in it was new. He has a headline that says New York first state to, you know, approve a college affordability plan. And you can bet, you know, he showed up to promote it with Hillary Clinton. He showed up to promote it when he announced it
Bernie
with
Sanders.
Bernie Sanders. Sanders. Yeah. So he is looking nationally to be able to not only promote it, but to say he got it through a split legislature. You know, while Congress is gridlocked, I'm getting stuff done in New York with a Republican Senate and a Democratic Assembly.
There's so many directions I want to go in here. That's gilding the lily a little bit, because everybody knows that it is Cuomo who has kept the Senate in Republican hands one way or the other over the years. So it's a little disingenuous for him to be saying, or his people to be saying, that he got it through a split legislature.
But it's an argument he is going to make. He's going to say, while the Republicans controlled, and look, you have to give credit where credit's due. He got marriage equality through a Republican Senate. Now, granted, it was with only four Republican votes, but those were key votes that allowed it to pass.
And they knew, the Republicans, that they didn't want Andrew mad at them because he really had them one way or the other, and they had to do what he wanted.
But it's an argument he's going to make. I got minimum $15 minimum wage. I got paid family leave. I got college affordability. And unlike Congress, this has been his whole argument, you know, since he took office. Unlike Congress, which is gridlocked, I get stuff done here. His whole brand is get stuff done, although he had a late budget this year.
He did, and now he's also announced there have been a spate of articles, yours and others, which are basically saying, I don't want much to do with Albany this year. I'm not going to Albany.
No, he knew his greatest leverage has been the budget. And he showed it again with what he prioritized this year and what he would not conclude a budget with. He got raised the age of criminal responsibility. He got college affordability. Now, you can argue the merits of what actually passed, and people certainly have, but he got the headline he wanted. And now he says, you know, well, if nothing else happens during the rest of the session, we got our agenda, we got our economic development agenda, we got all this other stuff, and we'll deal with what the legislature wants to do. But I'm going to run around the state and basically, you know, make sure stuff is getting built, infrastructure projects, economic development projects, and that's what I'm going to focus on the rest of the year.
Yeah, but on the other hand, there was a lot of hanky-panky with his economic development program, and two of his closest pals are on trial, going to be on trial in October, I believe. So when he's going around, you know, handing out doles of cash for economic development, somebody's got to be thinking, well, you know, it didn't work out the last time.
No, and it didn't. There are certainly issues. But you know what's amazing? It hasn't stuck to him. And I'll tell you what, even with the trial, which I have argued, and I did in print, I wrote a column a few months ago that everyone's looking at his reelection in 2018 and possibility of running for president in 2020. But I have argued that 2017 is going to be the make or break year. If those trials start and they really hurt him, even though he has not been criminally implicated, neither was Chris Christie in New Jersey, and his poll numbers after the Bridgegate trials are at an all-time low.
The most unpopular governor in the United States.
But so far, these scandals have not hurt Cuomo. His poll numbers are strong. They're not great, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're far from bad. I mean, they're still strong for a governor in his seventh year. And the one thing he has going for him, even if the trials happen, is if Trump is still as hot in the news as he is now, it sucked all the life out of New York politics that people are paying attention to Washington and not what's going on in Albany.
So let me go back to an earlier conversation we were having. The New York Times, when they ran their story on the college affordability thing, had a little asterisk up there and got after him about some of the hidden things that really weren't all that kosher about this bill. Now, you were willing to give him credit, as I think a lot of people will, for having gotten it through. Yet, when asked about the New York Times story, he blew a gut. What's that about?
It was very Trump-esque. I'm the one who asked him.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was the one who asked him. Asked him about the criticism of the college affordability plan, including the New York Times op-ed and editorial. And he went off. He says, well, I don't remember the last time that the New York Times, you know, impacted anything in terms of its editorial, any
race. Just like Trump, the failing New York Times.
Yeah, that's the only phrase he did not use, the failing New York Times. But he ripped into them. They didn't support my father. Interestingly enough, he said they didn't support him, although they endorsed him both times for governor. The only time they did not endorse him was in 2014 during the Democratic primary against Zephyr Teachout. But after he beat her, they endorsed him over the Republican. So, you know, it was surprising to hear that they never supported me, but he does not like criticism. And worse than that, he doesn't forget criticism, and he remembers how they treated his father, and he didn't like that, and he doesn't like how the editorial board has treated him at times, and he's not letting it go.
Let's talk about somebody named Melissa DeRosa, the first woman secretary. Now, some people think secretaries are people who take notes. They are not. The secretary is basically the chief of staff, the number two person after the governor.
Not most the powerful position in state government.
Yeah. And Melissa DeRosa comes with certain kinds of problems associated with her. Bolton St. John comes to mind.
Yeah, her father and brother, but her father's been a longtime lobbyist, and he is someone connected to a lot of issues. Bolton St. John is a major lobbying firm, which is one of the top lobbying firms in the state.
Formed, by the way, by Mel Miller, the former speaker, and Norman Adler. You remember Norman Adler, a major lobbyist who is retired, I think, from the business right now. But somehow, they're really one of the top players, lobbying players in New York, and here she comes with their imprimatur all over her.
Yes and no. She is solid on her own. She's done a lot. It's not like she's new to the Cuomo administration. She has been there since 2013, I think. She's been his chief of staff the last few years. She really has been one of his top advisors the last few years. Probably one of his, if not the closest, one of them, certainly. And I would argue probably the closest. So it's been there. This has come up periodically over the years, and she claims that she has recused herself from any issues involving what her father's working on. And she also says she's recused herself from issues her husband is working on. Her husband, Matthew Wing, was the governor's former press secretary who left the administration and became a top communications guy for Uber. And Uber obviously was a major issue this year. She claims that she has recused herself from all issues involving Uber and any issues involving her father. You know, you get into a tricky situation in that, yes, it doesn't look good that, you know, you have someone who's so close to people in the lobbying community. But on the other hand, she has the right to earn her own living. And certainly no one is going to deny
just like Ivanka
that she works hard. No, but she has talent and she's been in this field for a long time. So, you know, it's not a new issue, I would argue.
So I guess the question I have now is, I mean, what kind of relationship does a governor and a chief of staff or a secretary have to have? Are they alter egos or what?
It depends. They're different. You know, in some cases, Cuomo has had chiefs of secretaries to the governor who have basically been an alter ego, but also he's had people who have been able to stand up to him and say that's a bad idea. You know, Melissa DeRosa has been his chief of staff the last few years and now is his secretary. We're going to see. She's very tight. Whether she stands up to him or whether she just carries out what he wants to do, we'll get a clearer focus and then, you know, moving forward. But it could be many things. It could be his hatchet man, or woman. It could be someone who says, hey, you can't do this. This is going to look horrible. I think Melissa DeRosa has worn a lot of hats within the administration. She's helped set the communications message. She's helped deal with him behind the scenes. She's helped negotiate things. I think this is a case where her title is kind of caught up with what she's done for him.
Okay, that's great. Now, I want to talk to you about Uber. You mentioned Uber.
Hmm?
I've never understood it. Why New York City could have Uber and upstate New York couldn't have Uber. You can explain that to us, and then you can explain why we're going to get it now.
This is probably for the everyday New Yorker upstate. You know, you could talk about college affordability. You could talk about all these issues. The thing I've heard so many times from people upstate is, when are we going to get Uber? And like you said, New York City has had Uber for a few years. New York City has a massive subway system, a bus system. They have rickshaws. They have as much transportation, mass transit, as you can have in a single area, and yet they also were allowed Uber. Upstate, which has far less mass transit options, has not had it. It's been very frustrating to a lot of people.
Well, what was holding it back?
The truth, the trial lawyers, it was a big part of it. The
Why?
Trial lawyers have a big impact on the Assembly Democrats. They wanted more insurance, requirements for Uber drivers. You know, the upstate taxi industry wanted more background checks and fingerprinting. Like, they did agree to in New York City, but they didn't want to do it upstate, Uber. So that kept it up. But really, it was the Assembly. The Senate has been on board with it. The governor has been on board with it. The Assembly has blocked it the last few years. In a lot of ways, it reminded me of the fight over mixed martial arts. It took a few years. It kept being passed in the Senate, and it kept dying in the Assembly, I think for a different reason. And here now, finally this year, it just bubbled to the point where they had to do it. It was a frustrating thing for upstaters who said, you know, New York City dominated legislature, especially in the assembly, is blocking something that can really be a boon for upstate. And that's for the bars and restaurants, for people who don't want to drive drunk, for all these different reasons.
Ken Lovett, what's really disgusting about Albany is the lack of ethical behavior on the part of the legislature. I have no tolerance for all of the good people who write me notes and say, hey, we're not responsible. We're good legislators. Well, you elect your leaders. That's all I got to say. And Cuomo has been totally frustrated on getting any kind of ethics reform, major ethics reform here. He can claim all kinds of stuff, but he's just fooling around. They've just been fooling around with him. Is there ever a time that these people are going to say, hey, we need to have the kind of reform they've had in other states in which we are held responsible, and the Congress of the United States, in which we are held responsible?
Yeah, if people start electing different people and showing that this is an issue for them, if you poll it, 90% of people will say ethics is a real serious issue in New York and needs to be cleaned up, and yet people keep sending the same people over and over back to Albany. They all like their lawmakers, so the message is, yeah, we don't like the ethical situation, but they tolerate it. And I will tell you, and this may be the first time since I've been coming on the show that I'm going to say this, I think you went easy on the governor. You say that they wouldn't give it to him. I don't think the governor's pushed for it hard enough.
You think it was a double, triple, quadruple fake out?
I think the governor basically put the kitchen sink into his budget plan, everything all the advocates wanted, and then never pushed for it. Because guess what? When push came to shove, he pushed for college affordability. He pushed for a whole host of things in that budget, raising the age of criminal responsibility. But somehow, yet again, this ethics package, whether it was closing what's known as the LLC loophole that basically allows businesses to give unlimited amounts, whether it was a private ledger, trying to make it a full-time legislature, whatever it is, he did not push for that when push came to shove. He says the political will in the legislature is not there. But you know what? He could have held up passage of the budget. He held it up for the other things. Why not this?
Maybe because he couldn't get it.
He couldn't get it, or he didn't really want it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now,
by the way, the LLC loophole, no one benefits more from it than Andrew Cuomo.
He gets a ton of money,
mm-hmm.
and he has raised a ton of money. So speaking of money, let's talk about that. One of the reasons that the legislators were so angry at him was because he didn't give them their raise. By his so-called independent commission, they got the word, they didn't give them the raise. That really made a big difference in these budget negotiations. But have things calmed down a little? Have they realized that they can't have more money?
I think they were extremely angry at the governor. I think they overplayed their hand with the governor, because once the budget became late, the governor even publicly said this last weekend at the mansion, he said that they, his leverage is in the budget for a lot of this stuff. But once the budget goes late, you have two choices. You either do budget extenders, which they did pass one for a couple of months. And what that budget extender did, which amazingly was it funded the governor's economic development and infrastructure agenda for the year, not just for a few months, but for the year. So for the governor, he didn't need anything else. If they wanted to shut down the government and not pass the extender, they could have done that. He would have traveled around the state bashing them. Or they could adopt it, which they did, and they lost all leverage. So finally, they got a full budget, and that included most of his priorities that he wanted.
Tell me this. As long as we're on the legislature now and their behavior or lack of it, let's talk about the two leaders now, John J. Flanagan and Boss Hastie of the Assembly. How are they being perceived? Does anybody care?
Well, those are two different, very different questions. Whether the public cares, I can't tell you. Polls show, as usual, most people don't know who the legislative leaders are. But within their conferences, it's two different stories. Carl Hastie came out of this budget a lot stronger with his members, because they really wanted as a top issue to raise the age of criminal responsibility. They held out for it for the most part. They got it. He comes out really, really strong. But what we saw,
in other words, from 16 to 18.
Under the law previously, New York was one of two states where a 16 and 17-year-old who commits a crime could be charged can be tried as an adult, a felony. Now they changed it that it would be 18 before you could be charged as an adult, unless it was a violent felony. If it's murder or rape, then you're still charged as an adult, as a 16 or 17-year-old. But other felonies, you would be charged mainly as a juvenile, youthful offender. So he comes out stronger. Flanagan, on the other hand, boy, did we see divisions in that conference that we haven't seen in a long time. Flanagan won by a single vote to become majority leader in 2015 after Dean Skelos gave up the position because he had been charged with corruption. Flanagan has a real problem between the upstate conservatives led by his deputy leader, John DeFrancisco, who a lot of people feel has been undermining Flanagan openly, both publicly and within the conference.
Is it true?
You can make the case. I'm not in there, but I do know this. People who have been there for a long time have told me in the past, if the leadership disagreed, they did so in private, and then they showed a unified front in front of the conference. DeFrancisco is always one of the first people when Flanagan goes in there and says, this is the direction we're heading. DeFrancisco jumps up and says, no, we got to take on the governor harder. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. He is leading what some people have called the Albany version of the Freedom Caucus within the Senate Republicans.
Speaking of which, Nixon's son-in-law, Ed Cox, has taken on the governor in the most extraordinary way. He was on this program last week. He calls the governor all kinds of names, calls him a fraud, calls him this,
a thug.
Is this unusual for a state party chair to be doing this?
I don't think it's necessarily unusual for a state party chair, but I do think it's been unusual for Ed Cox during his term. He's been a little more above the fray. People have in the past said he doesn't go hard enough after Cuomo. I think it's interesting this comes as he's been working with the White House and working with, in the era of Trump. His language has gotten a lot more aggressive.
You think Trump is saying take him out?
He could be. He certainly could be, or people around Trump. But he's certainly going after Cuomo much harder than we've seen. And he's not only going after Cuomo, who he's called a political thug over and over, but he called Melissa DeRosa a political thug. He called Richard Azzopardi, Cuomo's deputy communications director, a thug. He's going after staff. And to be fair, the staff, in unprecedented levels, it used to be when I first got here, staff never went after elected officials. But now Cuomo's staff, they go on Twitter and they attack anybody, including elected officials. So,
have they ever attacked you? Twitter-wise,
I've been attacked. I don't know if I've been attacked on Twitter. I've been attacked in my own column, where they'll signal me out by name. They'll say, "Oh, only in the mind of Ken Lovett," or blah blah blah. And I'll print it all the time because I think it shows, it shines a light into their thinking and how they act.
Schneiderman, the attorney general, who we have talked about many times as the governor in waiting.
Aspiring governor, AG.
AG, or almost governor.
Almost AG,
has just hired a Bernie Sanders consulting firm and to raise his profile, I suspect, because people still don't know who he is. And what do you make of that?
Well, I think Schneiderman is certainly, since Trump has taken office, has tried to raise his national and statewide profile among progressives in particular. He's sued Donald Trump and the administration. He's been attacking Trump on issues. I think now the hiring of Revolution Messaging, which was really the digital arm for Bernie Sanders' campaign, is a signal that he wants to go further. And this is a group that certainly made a name for itself last year in the presidential primary by representing Sanders, doing digital fundraising, which was a huge thing for Sanders, and also his online messaging, social media messaging. So for him to do it, a lot of people think a couple of things could happen with Schneiderman. One, if these trials really hurt Cuomo, I mean really hurt him, to bring his numbers down to Christie levels, then you might see the governor not run for re-election. And if that's the case, Schneiderman would run. Yeah. So he wants to be in a position to be able to do that.
Ain't going
to
happen.
If Cuomo's numbers stay relatively strong where they are now or similar, I think Cuomo runs, Schneiderman runs for re-election. However, if Cuomo ultimately leaves to run for president, to do whatever he's going to do in the future, Schneiderman wants to be ready. He wants to court progressives. This group, Revolution Messaging, obviously they're on a high. De Blasio, the New York City mayor, hired them as well last year, and now Schneiderman has hired them to get his name out.
It's always wonderful to talk to our pal, Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News. He's bureau chief there. Ken, you just keep on coming back here and doing the wonderful work that you're doing. You are extraordinary. So that's the Capital Connection for this week. Our guest has been Ken Lovett, columnist and bureau chief for the New York Daily News. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Always fun.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.